This is an interview for the Shoe Workers Oral History Project at the Museum LA. The date is November 26, 2009. And this is... 2009. And this is Andrea Lungia. And today I'm interviewing Irene Harvey in Lewiston, Maine. Irene, could you start just by giving me your full name, including your maiden name?
My name is Irene Cecile Noel Harvey.
And where and when were you born?
I was born in Lewiston, Maine, 1944, October 23rd.
And did you grow up in this area?
Grew up on what they call Little Canada, which is River Street, right across the street from St. Mary's School, and which used to be the old Continental Mill.
All right. And what were your parents' names?
My parents' name was Antonio and Yvette Noel. My father was a shoe worker, and my mom was a mill worker for a while, but a stay-at-home mom after that because she had five of us.
Five children. Yeah. Where did you fall within the children, younger or older?
I'm in the middle.
In the middle.
Yes. And they all have black hair and brown eyes, and as you can tell, I have green eyes, and I was lighter in color. So I was the more quiet one.
Right.
Not.
So growing up in Little Canada, can you talk to me about what that was like? That must have been a very busy neighborhood, lots of kids.
Oh, it was wonderful growing up over there. The people, of course, were predominantly French, came from Canada or wherever to work in the mills and the factories. And it was just a wonderful neighborhood. Nobody locked their doors in those days. And kids played together. And it was a very, very clean neighborhood. People used to wash their sidewalks, their porches. I know. I had to use a brush to the porch every year. And most people were very, very friendly, and they were very, very hard workers. Most of them had big families. And even those who didn't had to work hard because you didn't make much money in those days. My father's paycheck would be about $35 a week working in a shoe factory when I was a little girl. That I do remember.
And did they come from Canada, or were they born here too?
My dad was born in the United States, but my mom was born in Canada. She came to the United States, I think, when she was about 15. So she spoke very, very little English. So it was predominantly all French. In school, we only had English about an hour to an hour and a half a day. So everything was in French.
And did your mother come with her parents or on her own?
No, she came with her parents. And first they went to Detroit, and then they came to Maine to work in the mills. And she came from a family of 17.
Oh.
And my grandmother was about 4'8", weighed about 90 pounds, and you could eat off the floors, and she worked in the mills also.
Yeah, 17 children.
17 children.
Did you have a chance to know her?
Oh, yes, I did.
You did?
Oh, yes. And whenever I gave her a Christmas card, or any kind of card, it had to be written in French. And I never lost my French. I still speak it fluent and write it fluent, which is an asset.
It is, and it's something that has been lost by a lot of the generations over the years.
I know.
How were you able to retain it?
Well, my husband, of course, we've been married almost 50 years. He doesn't speak French. He's Scotch, Irish, and Indian, and I know there's French in there somewhere. But the oldest one, the one that's gone, he spoke it, and he took it all through high school. And when he joined the service, he was the only one that spoke French on the aircraft carrier. So he never had to buy lunch or beer. Everything was free because he was the only one that could interpret when they went to France.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But the rest, I had to teach them English so they could communicate with their dad. But I never lost my French. And most shoe workers were all French. But there were some that weren't. But they got along with the French just as good as anybody else.
Right. And which mills did your dad work in? I mean, the shoe shops.
My dad worked at Lounge Shoe. Mm-hmm. Till they closed, I think. Or close to it. He was a nailer, which puts the high heel onto the shoe. As a matter of fact, he made my wedding shoe, which I had to learn how to walk on. They were size 3.5.
Wow.
Things change.
Yeah. And so, what made you want to go into the suit industry? Was it your dad had worked there, or your friends all went, or?
No, well, most people worked in the shoe factories because I did go to high school for 2 weeks, but I couldn't communicate that good. I was okay on paper, but not orally. So I quit school without telling my parents. So when they found out, I was babysitting a family of five children for $12 a week, doing everything else that went with being a babysitter, washing the floors and the laundry and all that stuff. So when they found out, they told me I had to go to work if I'm not going to go to school. So I went to work to help the family, which helped, but I had to get a worker's permit because I wasn't of age yet.
You were what, 15?
15. So that was in 1940, close to 1960, in between 59 and 60. And my very first job was that lounge shoe with a clothespin and a little piece of felt. They would stain the edges of the shoe. And the lady's name that was teaching me, I remember very well because her name was Irene also. So when that ran out, I went to Shapiro Brothers and worked there for quite a few years. I can't remember the amount of years.
And you did stitching mostly?
No, I did mostly what they call the making room. Before the sole goes on, and you take the wrinkles out of the shoes, that you know, because you weren't allowed to work on a machine till you were a certain age. Of course, I lied about that too, so I was on a machine early. Predominantly, I did most anything that they wanted me to do, like shanking, which was putting the metal piece inside, underneath, you stapled it in, and bottom cementing was my predominant one, which you cement the bottom of the shoe before the sole goes on. And then I did plugging, which you got 2 cents for 36 pairs per rack. And it was with hot cement with a little piece of, I don't know what you call it, but you had to put it on this little roller and stick it on to the bottom of the shank. And 36 pairs, you only got 2 cents a rack. So if you want to make money, you got to go. So you had a lot of burnt fingers.
Oh, wow.
And I did all kinds of other job, finishing work and making bows and whatever needed to be done, you went. And the minimum wage then was $1.05 an hour. That I do remember.
And that was at Shapiro's?
That was at Shapiro's. And I also worked at Clark Shoe. Over there, I did bench work, did some bottom cementing. Was there for a few years, and whenever a factory needed help and the other one was slow, they used to borrow you. So actually, not too many people were on unemployment, because if one didn't need you, the other one did. So if it's for a two-week period, nothing changed except they paid you. But if it was going to be longer than that, then you got done there and you worked in another factory, wherever, because there were so many of them.
Yeah. So leaving one shoe shop and going to another wasn't like burning your bridges permanently.
No.
It was understood that there was supply and demand.
If there was, that you were needed back, when it started over a certain period of time, you went back. Otherwise than that, you stayed where you were, got slow there, then you stopped working there and you went to another one. And then in 1964, I went to Falcon Shoe, and the plant was very young then, and I worked as a bottom cementer there also, which we made little kid shoes, and it was on a conveyor. I stayed there till I had my second child, then I had to leave, then my husband went in, and that was his first shoe factory job, which he was there for 35 years as a supervisor.
Really?
But I couldn't get back in for many years because their rule was husband and wife could not work in the same plant because of benefits, and when it came to death, you had two missing instead of one. So when the owner married the computer programmer or whatever she did at the time, the rule changed. So I went back.
Imagine that.
And I stayed there for quite a few years. Matter of fact, I stayed there till they were going to close, and I got recycled because I couldn't, my back was gone, because I also worked another job besides that. Most of us worked two jobs in those days.
What did you do besides the store?
I waitressed. I worked at Rolando's restaurant for 18 years, plus worked in a shoe factory. Did that at nights and on weekends. My husband also worked two jobs. We only had three children, but you didn't make much money, and it cost money. And I left there in 2004, on February 6th at 9:45. And by then I had been a receptionist for about 12, 15 years, plus printed all the work on the tags, put in all the information, how many pairs and what sizes. Also put in production for the cutting room. They recycled me. They didn't send me to school, really. I just was learning through the way she was teaching me. Like, Doss was the main restaurant. Uh-huh. And this is going to be the appetizer and everything. And within weeks, I was picking it up like a little sponge. Yeah. And I stayed there till I got laid off in 2004.
That's a long time.
Yep.
What was the management like at Falcon and Shapiro's and the different places you were?
Well, of course, at Falcon Shoe was more high-tech than it was at Shapiro's. We did a lot of stuff manual, and it wasn't on conveyor. You had to push racks and holes in the floor, and they'd put that monkey stuff, sawdust and cement, and tried to block the floors. The atmosphere was better at Falcon Shoe because you didn't have as many fumes as you did as at Shapiro's, because they had little blowers that would suck up the smell of the cements and stuff like that while you were cementing the shoes. But it was very, very strong. Gave you a headache and nausea and stuff like that. But as the years went, more ventilation was there, and you hardly smelt it. So you could really whip them out. But at Falcon Shoe, it was more, how would I say it, incentive work, because it was on conveyor. So if you did X amount of pairs per day, went over that, you got paid extra money. So you really wanted to push those little kids' shoes out. But then they went into boys, then they went into boots, which was also known as Dunham Bootmakers. Falcon Shoe also made boots for Browning, L.L. Bean. Oh, God, I can't think of all the names. Being customer service, I should have. I did that, too.
Yeah, so you wore a lot of different hats over the
years.
Yes.
Multitasking is what they call it. Somebody misses you, better know what they did, because you're going to be doing it.
Right.
Which was good at Falcon Shoe, because if somebody got sick, you could step into their shoes and somebody else could step into yours, vice versa.
Right.
But to me, Falcon Shoe was one of the better ones that I worked on. I'm not saying Shapiro wasn't, because the Shapiro brothers were very, very good to their people. But times were different. But Falcon Shoe had an owner, like, he was your brother. He cared about his people. He really, really cared about his people.
And who was that?
His name was Ted Johansson.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He was a great, great man.
I'd like to ask you, because just knowing you for a few minutes, you seem very outgoing. You must have had or made a lot of friends over the years in the shoe shops. Did you have friends that worked with you?
Yes, my sisters, my uncles, my aunts. My aunt was my floor lady at Shapiro Brothers. My uncle was my boss. And of course, there was no favoritism, believe me. And I was the one to get mostly in trouble, and I had tons of friends because I'm a chatterbox. And my sister that worked with me also, she, total opposite, very quiet. So whenever I got the whole gang going, I'd always stick her in there.
Yeah.
So she could get in trouble with me too.
Right.
And the Christmas parties were awesome. I mean, the closeness of the people were like, they would do anything to help you.
The people who worked at the shops, very close?
Yeah. And at Falcon Shoe also. It was like the neighborhood that I grew up in. It was like a neighborhood in the factories.
Oh, that's really nice.
And if you didn't know somebody, I was the type of person to say, "Hi, my name is Irene Noel. What's yours?"
Yeah, and what were the Christmas parties like? Can you describe that? Was it sponsored by the shoe shop?
Oh, no, we all brought in something to eat. And, potluck stuff thing. And sometimes they gave us an hour instead of half an hour. And sometimes some people would sneak in some libations.
Yeah.
That's when I got older. But they would, be very strict on that. But it was a wonderful time, and we chip in and buy a gift for the boss. And then most of the time we'd hope at after the lunch that we had brought and fed him so well that he would let us go. Most of the time they did.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. You had a lot of friends in the shoe shops. Did you socialize outside of the shoe shop?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Can you talk about what sorts of things? I mean, was it gatherings with your kids or going out on, you know, on the weekend or playing cards?
Oh, we had this one group. We used to play cards at different people's houses on Friday night. And whoever house it was supplied the lunch because we'd play poker or scat, mostly poker. And we did that for, I would say, 20, 25 years. But people started, you know, going their own way, moving out of state. And first thing you know, your group of having two tables was down to one table.
Yeah. But, and the shoe shops closed.
And then they started dwindling down. And, you know, people had to go to school to learn to how to do something else. Like when I lost mine and the last time. I didn't know anything about being on unemployment, never did it. So in order to get any bennies, I had to go to school, so I did the clerical program. So I went to school for just a little over 2 years. And working all of my life, I was shocked that I could only receive $143 a week. But like I said, it didn't make much money. So you didn't have much on the books. Because when I left Falcon Shoe, it had taken me, I think, 15 years to make $10.10 an hour working in the office. Mm-hmm. Of course, I started at 5, so.
Right.
And I didn't know anything, but I learned fast. And I loved it. I loved mingling with the vendors and being French-speaking when the orders came in from Canada. The lady was having such a, you know, really trying hard. So then I started speaking French. And the rest of the office was looking at me because, you know, we wrote it down then put it in the computer. Taking the order in French, they're all looking at me. What is she talking about? So then when Canada would call back, they would ask for me.
Right.
So that was a plus on my side.
Oh, yeah. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is important to add? People that you knew, maybe they passed away, that you remember? Stick out in your mind in the shoe shops?
If whoever passed away and you worked in the shoe factory, I mean, going to the wake at the funeral home was lines outside. I mean, everybody showed up because everybody was so close. Today, it's different. I like the closeness of then better than I like it now, because now it's dog eat dog, and it's piecework. Mm-hmm. And being a stitcher, I can't imagine ever doing that, because that's got to be the toughest thing there is when you're really pounding away to try to make a living. I mostly worked. I didn't want to know if they told me I was on piecework, I automatically couldn't. I had no speed. But if they told me I was just on incentive like everybody else, I'd flip out the work.
Yeah.
It made me nervous. Which most people are like that, but some people, they go. Okay. My sister was one of them because she didn't like to talk as much as I did, but she concentrated on what she was doing. I did too, but I didn't do as much as she did. She had bigger paychecks than I did too.
Now you talk about being sociable, and people were very sociable. Did people have a chance to play pranks, practical jokes, sense of humor, that type
definitely,
of thing?
Definitely, definitely.
Do you have any recollection?
Oh, yes, I do.
Could you talk about some of those things?
Well, being a bottom cementer, when you bottom cemented, it's called the filler, different sizes filler that, you know, you wipe up your cement with and no drips, and you stuck it in the middle. Well, they told me, why don't you get in the box? And they were big, big boxes. I was short, I still am, but so I got in the box. So the buzzer goes off to go to work, and the boss is saying, where's Irene? And nobody's saying anything, and I can't get out of the box because they closed it. And they closed it pretty bad because I had to start hollering because I was running out of air here. So guess who got punished for that one?
Yeah.
Not them.
No.
I had to work an extra half hour.
Oh, my.
Everybody was gone. But I did it more than one time after that, too.
Yeah.
And they'd pull pranks like, put a dead mouse on your bench. That was a Shapiro Brothers. And I mean, you figure I'm only 15 and 16. And of course, I'd scream and the boss would come and nobody put it there. It went up there all by itself and it killed itself on my bench. Kind of pranks they'd pull, too. Or take your sandwich and glue it with cement on your bench, you know, because it was wrapped in, not saran wrap then, but
Wax paper,
and it would stick good. So we always used to go in a group to have lunch together, you know, little corner to get away from your machine and stuff like that. Couldn't get your sandwich off. So I got smart. I just open it up and take my sandwich after that, and then pick it up, and then bring it with me if it wasn't stuck to my bench. Kind of things like that.
Right. Well, that's funny. Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. I wish I could remember more.